WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but
we have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will be your host. You have a bit of an idea as to who or could be joining us here on this radio program this evening. We start things off right after traffic with the State House report. Joining us this week, we have State Representative Patrick Kearney. It has been quite a while since the representative from the 4th Plymouth District has chatted with us. We will kind of get an idea as to what it has been like the past year dealing with COVID for 365 days. Get his take on it and also check with him about some of the legislation he's filed since being reelected to a new term and being sworn in earlier this year. Bills that he has sponsored and co-sponsored. Follow that up with local businessman and all-around good guy Peter Brown will be my guest. And we'll check with Peter about being in business during a pandemic 1 year, the benchmark 1 year, and get his take on it. Again, Peter's a guy who not only is a businessman, but he's also somebody who is very much involved, whether it's with the Chamber of Commerce, Plymouth, Pembroke, or anything that is the South Shore, Peter is very much involved with. So we look forward to talking with him about that. Hour number two, we'll speak with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan. Now, a couple of things of note that we could talk with the mayor about. First off, we usually get a COVID update, how things are going with the mayor and with the numbers in the city, as well as, oh, now we know that folks are getting vaccinated. We'll see how that program is going. Also, we'll chat with him about incidents happening last week, a number of fires that were reported. One, probably the most notable one, was at the fairgrounds, the old State House building. That was a 5-alarm fire. We'll talk to them about that. And also talk with him about a ceremony that was held a couple of weeks ago to mark the 80th anniversary of the Strand Theater, which was in downtown Brockton. It is still seen as one of those structure fires that had the highest amount of firefighter lives lost. 13 were lost, March of 1941. We'll chat with him about that and some other things that actually were special to this year's ceremony. We'll close things out with Keith Hayes. Keith Hayes, radio personality with hoobazoo.com. So a sports guy. We'll chat Patriots with him and all of the activities last week, the Patriots spending a boatload of money, hoping to be a little bit more competitive this coming season. We'll chat with Keith about that and more. Before we get ready to segue into traffic, one other note I want to bring you up to speed with. As listeners, we have, in fact, updated the podcast site, at least most of all the podcasts from 2021. If you have wanted to check back and listen to a particular show, those are now listed on our Monday Night Talk podcast site. You just go to the homepage of 95.9 WATD and you'll be able to find all of our podcasts. Right now, time for us to step away to see what's happening out on the roadways. Being brought to you by Brendan's Smoke Shop, online at brendansmokeshop.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. The expressway southbound is slow from Southampton Street to Columbia Road. You're backing it from Bryan Ave to the split. Northbound's crawling from Mass Ave up into the tunnel. Routes 3 South and 24 South are both moving along. And 93 is delay-free either way between Braintree and Canton. This report is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. This week at Whole Foods Market, get 5 yellow mangoes for $5 through March 23rd, plus an extra 10% off for Prime members while supplies last. See more in the Whole Foods Market app. Traffic on the 9s every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeffrey from Brennan's. For once, I am at a loss for words. I'm just speechless. I mean, what can I say? I, like you, am a speck of dust on a rock floating literally in the middle of nowhere. It makes me wonder how people like Charlie Baker think they have the authority to tell this speck of dust how I should blow around on this rock. Newsflash, Baker and cronies, you're just a weenie speck like me and everyone else on this planet. I have only one authority, and last time I checked, the creator of the universe didn't work for the Commonwealth. In your failed attempt to control specks of dust, you cost the Commonwealth billions. I may be a fool, but I'm not foolish like you. Billions of dollars, dudes. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
We return for the first segment of Monday Night Talk. Traditionally, the first segment we reserve for our folks who work up at the State House, who work on our behalf, whether it's a state senator, state representative, one of the constitutional officers, maybe the governor or lieutenant governor, or even the state auditor who was on a couple of weeks ago. Joining us this week, he represents the 4th Plymouth District, state rep district. We have Patrick Kearney joining us. Representative, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me on.
My goodness, it seems like it's been forever since we've had a chance to have a conversation, but COVID hasn't necessarily kept all of us as close as we should be. How have you held up throughout the pandemic?
I've been doing well, as I'm sure you can imagine, much like a lot of other folks and their families. It's been a struggle between family responsibilities, work, different changes in work cultures, working remotely, spending a lot more time on Zoom as we are now, and not seeing a lot of the same friendly faces that we typically run into at local events. And as you know, the legislature has been voting fully remote. So it's been interesting times for the last year. It's been interesting times for all of us. I certainly, this past week, was missing. We usually do our St. Patrick's Day parade in Scituate and our annual St. Patrick's Day breakfast, which we usually have about 100 to 150 people attend, community breakfast. And I'm missing friends, neighbors, and the spirit of the spring season. So I'm hoping that as we continue the vaccine rollout, as schools start to head back to full in-person now that we're getting teachers vaccinated, that a sense of a normal is starting to come back with Red Sox games at 12% capacity for opening day and hopefully increasing as we get into the summer. I'm excited that it's not over yet, but we're certainly we're on the back nine, and I'm looking forward to getting back to a new normal. It's been a long year for everybody in the 4th Plymouth District, around the Commonwealth, and really around the world. So it's nice to be on here. It's nice to be catching up, and I'm hoping that we can be back in the studio for further conversations in person soon.
Indeed. And, you know, folks may or may not realize it, but not only are you a proud member of the House, but you also serve your country. And what is that your service to your country been like? How has COVID changed your role in the military?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've actually had a very interesting year as a officer in the Navy and the reserves. The Navy has been in desperate need of manpower, and actually there were a couple hundred men and women from my reserve unit that were activated to support the United States Navy Military Sealift Command and their ongoing efforts to move troops, fuel, food around the world. And I was actually proud to be a part of that. I left January 25th, and I returned the end of October. I was proud to be recalled. I did 3 months of active duty on board of the USNS Patuxent, which was the duty oiler in the Atlantic. The ship does underway replenishments for the carriers. And I was one of many hundreds of naval reservists that stepped up to the plate and provided COVID support to Military Sealift Command and the Navy. I'm hoping that the Navy's needs are continuously being met, and that as we get out of this and we start to vaccinate our armed services, both here at home and abroad, that they do not need to lean in the reserves as much as they have had to in the last year.
You know, since you and I had a chance to talk, you've been reelected. You are in the midst of, or in the beginning of, your newest term here. We're, you know, going on 2.5 months into your new term here. What is it like to be reelected, and what has the process been like for you to file some new bills or co-sponsor bills? How's that process been going for you this time around during COVID?
It's been very exciting. I'm very, very grateful to the residents and the voters in Marshfield and Scituate for reelecting me. I take this job very seriously. We've been able to accomplish a lot in the last 2.5 years. With that said, there's still a lot to accomplish, and that's what I wake up every morning to do, is to help my constituents, not only with legislative pieces and trying to change things on the macro level, but also helping individual families on the micro level. And that's why I ran for office to begin with. That's why I re-ran for office, and I actually got to give a shout out to my legislative aide, Katie Baxter. She helps run the office, and we've been helping hundreds of families with issues with unemployment, whether someone put their middle initial in wrong and can't get a hold of someone, folks that have struggled getting things through the Registry of Motor Vehicles, doing the constituent services at the local level that we need to do to take care of the folks that live in Marshfield and Scituate. But aside from the personal services and the local politics, we have been doing a lot to try to address things on a macro scale and from a policy standpoint. We have just finished the bill filing. We have over 25 pieces of legislation that we're working on ourselves. There are a couple hundred others bills that I have co-sponsored. And as we start to evaluate what our revenue picture looks like over the next few years and try to tackle the issues that are facing the district, accurate flood insurance maps, assisting our fishing industry, fighting for our teachers who are being forced into the classroom without a vaccination plan. There's a lot of issues that we're trying to tackle, and I'm excited and eager and ready to get to work this session. I've been appointed by the new speaker, Ron Mariano, who I was excited to support, to the Ways and Means Committee. And as the American Rescue Plan just passed, and we are receiving a tremendous amount of not only earmarked aid from the feds, but a lot of unrestricted aid, I'm looking forward to being a member of that committee and seeing what we can do with some of the federal assistance that our state budget will be receiving over the next year.
You know, one of the things that looking at some of the bills that you have, I feel like I wish I had enough time to reach out to a friend of ours. He goes by the name Joe Flood, or Joe Rossi. I don't know how much you've had in conversations with him, but I know one of your pieces, one of your bills happens to focus on private flood insurance, Massachusetts Private Flood Insurance Act. Talk to me about this piece of legislation and how important it is to not only your district, but the coastal community here in the Commonwealth.
Yeah, I'm actually really proud of this bill. We've spent a lot of time with Joe putting this together. Joe, as you know, is probably not only the flood expert on the South Shore, but a flood expert around the country. And we've been looking at the flood issues, not only in the 78 coastal communities that we have in Massachusetts, but there are other communities in the western part of the state that also have flood insurance issues due to spring mud flow, rain, rivers and lakes being flooded with rain. So I've been working closely not only with Joe, but with the Coastal Coalition, the Coastal Caucus, Representative Cutler, and Representative Machino, other South Shore reps on this flood insurance bill. And I'm very proud of it. It does a lot, and I don't want to get too much into the weeds, but it sets rules for renewal of private flood insurance policy. It allows the state's Division of Insurance to promulgate rules and regulations to implement the bill. It it describes how admitted carriers can notify their intent to operate in the state, how they want to leave the state if they're going to be pulling their business. And long story short, there are over 3,000 flood homes in the floodplain in Massachusetts, in my district, a lot more in Massachusetts. And as we continue to address the issues of climate change, rising sea levels, repairing our seawalls, and the national flood insurance policy changes, we need to be doing our part at the state level to make sure that our residents are covered with quality insurance at affordable rates, and that we are keeping that space as competitive as possible to keep rates low for the folks that need flood insurance, and also be fighting for the money that we need to protect their homes with sustainability measures like seawalls, wave attenuation devices. And we're working on legislation for that too. So I've been proud to work with Joe, the Coastal Caucus, and I'm hoping that as we move this bill forward, we can really modernize how we do flood insurance policies, private flood insurance policies here in Massachusetts.
Well, we proudly have Joe on a regular basis because we know how often we keep an eye on the National Flood Insurance Program, you know, whether it's going to be updated, whether Congress is going to take it up and make changes, or if they're going to basically just extend it until, you know, for another 6 months, you know. So it's great to at least be hearing, having the conversation with another individual other than Joe, who actually, like you said, he is, when you're talking about flood insurance, he's not only the name when it comes to understanding, you know, that, but also around the country, because he attends so many different conferences and he talks with so many people, that he's one of the bright minds when it comes to protecting people against damage when it comes to, you know, rising waters, you know, or when we have storms.
We're really lucky to have Joe here on the South Shore. And as someone that lives in a flood zone myself, he's taught me a lot. It's been a pleasure to work with him. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of issues as we move forward with flood insurance. And we tried, Joe's been working with us too on encouraging our federal partners, Senator Markey, Senator Warren, Congressman Keating and Lynch, to move the ball forward on the National Flood Insurance Program, because it can worry and scare ratepayers when every 6 months it's coming up on the extension deadline of whether or not they're going to maintain coverage. That can be a scary thought as we approach winters with nor'easters that hit our communities pretty hard.
And again, if you are just tuning in, you're listening to the State House Report. And joining us is State Representative Patrick Kearney, representing the 4th Plymouth District, and where we're getting caught up with the representative. Looking at some of your other bills, it seems like that there are a good number of your bills are either marine-based or geared towards assisting the fishing industry. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, we try to have a broad overview of the issues that we need to tackle, but also a local view of the issues and what we can get done. As you know, Kevin, I actually grew up working on charter fishing boats in Scituate Marsh, in Scituate Harbor and Green Harbor, different lobster boats as well. I have a personal connection to the fishing industry, and it also supports a very vast local economy. When folks come in to come on those fishing boats, they're spending money at local restaurants like Haddad's. The boats are buying fuel from Amelia Fuel, Kenny Duvall Fuel, Sean Harris Fuel. It's supporting a tremendous amount of local business. And they need a champion, not only at the state level, but the federal level, to be making sure that their businesses and their ability and rights to fish in Cape Cod Bay is being protected and watched. That's what I've been doing, and I'm going to continue to do that. I was proud to support the president of the Stellwagen Bank Charter Boat Association, Mike Piernock. He's a Plymouth resident. He was just picked by the governor to be the Massachusetts representative on the New England Fisheries Management Council, the association and the regulatory agency that looks at a whole host of commercial and recreational fishing regulations from northern Maine down to Connecticut. So it's important that we have those allies, that we're lobbying the governor and Congress to have folks from the local area be involved in the policy making and to have a voice. That's what we've been doing. I was proud to be a champion for the fishing industry, and I have been trying to do that through different regulatory and legislative work. So, yeah, we get a tremendous amount of bills, but, you know, certainly a lot focused on coastal resiliency, pilot programs for wave attenuation devices, an act modernizing national flood insurance programs, trying to keep the lobster fishery, which is being shut down in Cape Cod Bay this spring and has been for the last 5 years, open to the local small businesses in the district. And that's what I have been doing. That's what I continue to do. And I'm proud of my coastal heritage, my coastal roots. And I hope that that advocacy continues to promote small business in the district.
As we just have a couple of moments left here, with this conversation that we're having, we are basically in the budget season. We're talking fiscal 2022. What are your thoughts as the process will be moving into the House for the House to put together their version of the budget? What are your thoughts and your concerns about the state's finances, you know, during a pandemic?
So at the beginning of this pandemic, Kevin, a lot of us were worried. We were looking at anywhere from a $2 to $8 billion budget deficit, which is anywhere from, you know, a 10 to 15% cut. As you know, that can be a pretty alarming and daunting report. But I've been proud to, as I said, get assigned to the Ways and Means Committee to be in the room talking about how we're going to appropriate federal assistance. And actually, the January revenue report for Massachusetts was up 11.9% from last January before the pandemic, when unemployment was at 1.8% in the city of Austin, 3% statewide. And we know from a legislative standpoint that there's a lot of businesses on Main Street that are hurting. But from a revenue standpoint, the revenue in the state is up. So what we are really going to have to focus on, what my colleagues and I have been discussing, is a very targeted approach to a recovery. Because there are folks that are making lots of money, and there are folks that are really struggling. And so when we see that revenue picture on the uptick whilst businesses are closing, it's really our responsibility as legislators to make sure that when we're doing stimulus at the federal and local level, that it's very targeted. It's helping small businesses, restaurants that have been affected, in-person mom-and-pop shops. That's what we are focused on. And with the American Rescue Plan, there's a lot of unrestricted aid. So I think that the most important thing as a legislator is to listen. We have been doing that. I've been taking constituents' phone calls. They're always welcome to provide input to me on my cell phone, 781-690-2000. 7923 or at the office, 617-722-2000, or really on my email, patrick.kearney@mahouse.gov. We want to hear from constituents. I don't pretend to have all the answers. I have some ideas. But as we try to recover, as we try to target that unrestricted aid to the folks that have been hit the hardest, we're going to need help from the public. And that's what I'm looking forward to doing.
Representative, I want to thank you so much for your time and sharing this discussion with my listeners as you are their representative in Scituate and Marshfield, serving the 4th Plymouth District, and we look forward to having you back on in the coming weeks and months just for updates.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. I really am looking forward to us getting back together in person in the studio, having some more discussions, and I'm sure that as we continue to recover and as we get into the budget season and start taking up major legislation for this session, there'll be plenty to talk about. So keep in touch. And I'm looking forward to, as I said, getting together with you soon.
There he is, State Representative Patrick Kearney, our guest, first guest of the evening. We're going to step aside. And when we come back, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through.
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
Call 617-426-9444 or find online meetings at aaboston.org.
If I'm not commuting anymore, where do I really want to live?
While you handle life's questions, Merrill Guided Investing helps you manage your portfolio and invest for your next move. With the option to work with an advisor at a low cost and minimum. Merrill, a Bank of America company. Visit MerrillEdge.com/investing goals to get started today.
Investing involves risk. Merrill Lynch, Pierce Fenner, and Smith Incorporated, both a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor, member SIPC. Investment products are not FDIC insured or not bank guaranteed and may lose value.
Okay. Indeed knows unexpected demand can stretch your business thin.
Leon speaking.
Like at Leon's Plumbing.
Sorry, quickest we can get there is next Friday.
To stay out of hot water, he needs to get started hiring right away.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. And the moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first sponsored job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
We return to yet another segment here on Monday Night Talk. Just a reminder that if you have missed any of our podcasts, at least in 2021, I am officially up to speed. I'm up to date. The podcast site is up to date. So if there was any discussions that we have held that you liked, that you want to hear again, we do post the show in its entirety. So we ask you. And we're able to do that thanks to our great sponsors. One of those premier sponsors joining us right now, Peter L. Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass is my guest for this segment. And the idea of having Peter on is we just passed the 1 year milestone of dealing with COVID-19. And I thought I would have Peter on because Peter was a reoccurring theme with other business owners as we talked about enduring together this pandemic and trying to get through, at least in the early stages when we were flattening the curve. Peter, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. How are you today?
I'm good. I should say welcome back to the program because
yes,
you are reoccurring. How are things looking back over a year, looking at things today? How are things going for you as a business owner and how are things going for Tiny and Sons Glass?
It's going really well right now. I mean, as long as we're doing our due diligence, doing the safe distance and doing the pre-cleaning and wiping things off, we're doing very well. I'm extremely privileged, extremely lucky right now, I'm telling you. So,
well, And you know, you're probably giving away more of that Tiny and Sons auto glass cleaner than
every
ever before.
It's a free can, small one. It's awesome.
You know, looking back, you know, I don't know what your memories are, because it seems as though it's been one long day as we're going through this, having to wear masks and, you know, trying to figure out when we're going to see a peak spike in people who are contracting coronavirus. Kind of take us back to, you know, trying to be a business owner in the onset when people were asked to stay home and work from home.
So, I mean, we talked about it. I remember the first time we had talked about it, and it was like a blizzard or a hurricane. And, you know, we got that defensive mode and we're going to, we survived. But this was so different. And I honestly thought I was scared. I honestly thought that I was going to go out of business. I mean, this time last year, it was just starting to ramp up. The cases were just starting to get really prevalent. It was starting the shutdowns. And we had one of our employees who had a relative that the caregiver gave us the COVID-19. And we had to shut down for almost 4 weeks because we couldn't get tested. That cost me a lot of money. And even with the PPP, I'm still not going to get that back. And then towards the summer when we started to get outside and we were able to work a little bit harder, hardest part then was trying to get employees to come back because of that extra money they were getting on unemployment. But once that settled down and we were able to get back into the end of the summer, things started to come, you know, coagulate. We started to get more of a rhythm. We were getting used to fogging cars. We had to shut down our waiting area, but we actually got better at our service. We were able to be more precise on our times and turn around cars more cost effective. Even though we're spending more money on wiping down and chemicals and stuff like that, it business wise, it was almost like I went to school again. And so now we have all these contingency plans in case something like this happens again.
Well, what's interesting is knowing that folks were asked to stay home and that people were working from home, that meant that people were not utilizing their regular modes of traffic, which I would think that you saw a cut in the number of installations or glass replacements because people weren't doing their normal mode of transportation.
Well, believe it or not, Kevin, even though they weren't driving in and out of Boston, with the shutdown and people being cooped up at home, they actually drove more and they were driving around town. And the governor and the federal government kept the road construction going. So there was a lot of broken windows. I mean, we weren't, you know, as our usual pace, but we kept pretty busy. And one of the funny things is, not out of this whole thing, not to, you know, make fun, but people were breaking things that they usually do not break. You know what I mean? Because they were going to Lowe's more, they were going to Home Depot, they were going to their local, like Tomasi's and all that to do lawn care. They were going on trips with the kids, you know, kayaking and stuff like that. So they were breaking more stuff just to try to keep busy.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, that people were driving more. What about other businesses? Knowing that you're a previous chamber president for the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce, and that you were very active, an active member in other chambers, what were you hearing or what have you been hearing from other businesses throughout the year of COVID?
The biggest hit, as you know, is the restaurants and the service industry. The gyms, the physical therapy, the chiropractors, and you know, being involved in the Plymouth Chamber and the Pembroke Chamber, we saw that, and a lot of businesses went out. There was nothing that we could do to save that because of the closure. But on the other hand, we became closer our network became closer, even though we weren't getting out. I mean, I was doing 12, 14 hours a week networking, and it just stopped. But we got our Zoom calls going. We got connected. We stayed in touch with each other. And if you can, the perfect example of intuitive is Speedwell Tavern, Jordan Chabot. He rallied to downtown. They actually opened up three new restaurants in downtown Plymouth. The Pembroke area, Kingston, Marshfield. The takeout industry was just unbelievable. And the chambers rallied and made sure that those their hours were put up. They were published. Their menus were published. Who was delivering, who was not. Call-ins, whatever, what have you, whatever they could do, the chambers helped to keep those businesses at least at an even keel. As far as the smaller business, the mom and pops, it's going to be hard. Even with the slowly opening up, even with the stimulus package that just got passed, and then with the governor opening up things today, it's going to take a long time. It's going to take another year. And those people are going to need our help as far as chamber goes. Our small businesses are really in need.
Do you feel that local businesses have enough to withstand a second full year of COVID? Because the numbers as of late for COVID, positive COVID tests here in the Commonwealth are actually, and not only plateaued, but there's been a slight uptick. Give me your thoughts on, can businesses sustain and survive a second year of COVID?
I think businesses who are open and survived so far have the means to survive and continue. What concerns me is that the reopening today, the governor is going to start reopening faster than I feel comfortable with, especially with the uptick of this new virus. And this is what we saw last year as it started. This was the time of year that we saw that surge, the first one. And I know why he's doing it, and I respect it. He's been doing an incredible job. But what I'm concerned about is that he's lifted the travel bans, and he's going to lift all this stuff. And I'm afraid in five or six weeks, especially when everybody comes back from spring break, we might see that resurgence. And I don't want to go through another shutdown. I'd rather have the gradual that he's been doing, and this very slow pace, which is very frustrating for all of us. I understand that, but it's the key to keep going. I've been able to control my office. I've been able to control my shop. I've been able to get the testing that I need done. I've been able to take the people out of play that have been infected and put them in their quarantine. But if we open it wider, like he's talking about today, I'm afraid that I won't be able to control that in 4 or 5 weeks if we do have that resurgence.
You're just tuning in. We're chatting with local business owner Peter Brown, who is our guest. He is also a premier sponsor of this radio program, a proud sponsor of this program, and we appreciate his trust and his continued support as we all endure this pandemic, global pandemic. And I thought it was really right to have Peter on to talk a little bit about, a year after, closing everything down. And you're right. Now, going back to the Governor Baker decision, or the decisions to kind of fast track everything, do you feel that politics are paramount here? That's why we're seeing a rush to, quell the travel bans and to allow folks into larger gathering spaces. You feel it's all either geared towards another run for him, or if he decides not to run for a third term, maybe it makes way for Karen Polito, he's a lieutenant governor now, but possible gubernatorial candidate.
That's a tough question. And I have so much respect for Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito. And I've met them repeatedly. I mean, our legislative force down here is just, they have us on first name basis. It's a lot of our businesses, the amount of times they've come and visited our area. I think it is. I don't think it's political, but I think it's an outside force because you're seeing the surrounding states pushing it open. I feel that he is being forced. I mean, his hand being forced a little bit. But I know in his heart that if some stuff goes wrong and it goes the other way, he will shut down. And I know for in my heart that he would. And I don't think he's that type of person that would do it for a political reason, either here, him or Lieutenant Governor.
He was a few weeks ago. We actually had Michelle Pecoraro from
yes.
the Plymouth 400 and Matt Muratori, State Rep Matt Muratori on, and we were talking about, you know, we saw a postponement of all of the, you know, Plymouth 400, the celebration of America's hometown, celebrating this big momentous birthday. Being somebody who's put a lot of time and energy into Plymouth and the tourism, how do you feel about a rebound and, you know, the area being able to experience all the events that were planned for 2020, hopefully seeing the day of lights in 2021?
I you know, if you're going to make dinner reservations in Plymouth, I would start doing them now, because the pent-up demand for people to come and visit is huge. And I think we're going to see not the resurgence of people coming from overseas. We're going to see the resurgence of people local that want to see their roots, that want to be involved, that want to go see the Mayflower, the Pickleball Museum, the Patuxets, the Grant House, the arts. They're going to want to see all this stuff. And it's not just Plymouth. It's going to be Quincy. It's going to be Boston. It's going to be all over the place. And I was in a Zoom call with Michelle and Matt and Lee, Amy Naples from the executive director from the Plymouth Chamber of Commerce. And we're talking about a convention center. We need a convention center. So we're ready. I think it's, you know, it's going to be slow. We're going to be probably spacing out all the events that got canceled, not this year, but through 2022. You're going to see a gradual reopening for the Plymouth. But like I said, if you're going to go to, you know, if you want to eat dinner in Plymouth, stop making reservations now.
If there's a place that you're going to visit in Plymouth for dining, do you have a few favorite spots yourself?
Well, my first favorite is Speedwell Tavern with Jordan Chatter. He's on the board with us at the Plymouth Chamber of Commerce. He is the heart of their restaurant businesses down there. Second one would be Marlboro, the French restaurant. Dylan's Tavern is amazing. Tavern on the Wharf. The new Artisan Pig across the street from the Pilgrim Hall Museum has great pizza. The Tasty, Koji's, the World Tavern. I mean, you can spend, Kevin, you and I can walk that street 3 days in a row.
Yep.
And we'd still not see all these awesome restaurants.
Yeah. Downtown. Plymouth has one of the most phenomenal downtown, scenic downtowns here in the Commonwealth. Not to say that I'm overlooking any other community, but there's so much. You've got waterfront property and waterfront eateries and places to stop in to get trinkets. Interesting enough, over the weekend, myself and my significant other went to Rio's Brazilian Steakhouse.
Yes.
In Plymouth, where they serve the meats right off of the skewers. Yeah, it's fantastic. The one thing that I would, not only did I love the different cuts of steak and sausage and chicken, but they also had like a roasted pineapple that had like brown sugar and cinnamon on it. It was to die for. It's fantastic.
So if you go to Pembroke, restaurants in Pembroke, Dishes Tavern, you got the Alumni.
Yep.
You got Dog. Have you been to Gather for breakfast?
Not yet, but I will go there.
You got to go. You have that corned beef hash in the skillet to die for.
Yeah, we're speaking with Peter Brown, who is a proud sponsor of this program. and a proud business owner who supports everything local. Peter, as we wrap this up, anything you want to say in closing to those folks who are tuned in?
So even though the governor's going to open up, wear your mask, do your social distancing, wash your hands. We still got a good 6 months. We don't want to shut down again.
No, I definitely wouldn't want to. And Peter, again, thank you for your sponsorship and thank you for the things that you do for this community. You, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how many hours a day you spend, but besides being a business owner, you care deeply about the South Shore and the communities that are within it. And we, I thank you.
I thank you for giving me the opportunity to say what I want.
Got it. We are going to step aside. That'll do it for our number one. Our number two is coming up in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
WATD-FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD, streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Dad, you think UFOs will ever come?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been invited.
Can we invite them?
Yeah, but how?
Well, we've got a flat roof and Christmas light strings. We can spell out UFOs land here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll hold the ladder for you.
Later that night, there arose such a clatter.
Dad, look out on the lawn! A UFO with a broken windshield.
Wow, better call Tiny and Sons. They'll replace that windshield and insurance pays.
Do space aliens have insurance?
Oh, they wouldn't leave home without it.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. Our service is out of this world. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I personally want to spread it around.
Don't miss Talk with Francesca, Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Okay, we're back. Hour number two of Monday Night Talk. Remember, I know I keep doing this every segment, but we have updated the podcast site. That means anything that you have liked that we've done, segments we've done, especially our reoccurring segments with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan. Those are up. At least the 2021 versions right now are up. And joining me as the co-host of Monday Night Talk is none other than Brockton Mayor, the 50th Mayor of the City of Champions, Robert Sullivan, joining us. Mayor, how are you today, sir?
Kevin, excellent. Thanks again. I love to be the unofficial co-host, so thank you for having me on.
No. Didn't we last time remove the unofficial?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think so, and it's an honor and a privilege, so thank you so much.
So it's been a busy couple of weeks, and I love having you on because we can kind of tick down the list and talk about a bunch of different things. Probably the guest, the special guest you actually had in the city last week, we could start there. Not only the governor doing his COVID press conference, you had Congressman Stephen Lynch, who is... You can't find, when you're talking about elected officials, he's right up there. And you had the Attorney General also in for visits. What was that like, having kind of that revolving door of high power individuals coming to the city to talk about the latest news?
Yeah, I mean, we welcome all our public officials, federal and state and local. We're all in this together. And, you know, when Congressman Lynch, and he's an unbelievable congressman and a dear friend, and he was one of the first, I believe he actually was the first to call me when COVID hit the city of Brockton, and he said, what can we do? What can I do? Do you need masks? What do you need? And then Ed Markey, Senator Markey, was the same way. So Congressman was welcomed to City Hall. We did a socially distant inside because it was bitter cold last week event, and it was relative to how much money we're getting from the federal government. It's $35.6 million. It's the America's Rescue Plan Act. It's a game changer, Kevin, I'll be honest. It's a ton of money. But the purpose is to utilize it for healing and rebuilding. Brockton, as you know, has been ravaged physically, financially, emotionally by COVID. You know, we've lost over 400 people. We've had over 12,300 cases. And the money that's going to come in is going to be used in a manner that's going to create the ability to rebuild the city of Champion. So I want to thank the congressman, and Congressman Neal from Massachusetts was really leading the charge. And of course, President Biden. The city of Brockton is definitely on the president's radar, and we welcome that, and we thank him that. And it's proven by not just the money that's coming in, but the influx of vaccine quantity that's coming in, because Brockton Neighborhood Health Center was designated a federal designee. So, you know, we're just thankful. But at the same time, we're never going to forget the damage and the harm and the sadness and tragedy caused by COVID in Brockton. And we're not out of this yet, Kevin. You know that. So COVID is still here. It's still creating sickness and death, not just in the city or the Commonwealth, but in the nation. So we got to continue to be vigilant and diligent and work together.
That's fantastic news. $35 million. Any idea as to how the city will receive those funds? And then how do you plan what to do with that money? Is that something that goes into the general fund and is operating? Or is it a matter of you look for different ways to spend that money to rebuild the city?
Yeah, so the congressman told us, you know, we should expect that money to come to Brockton in between 60 and 90 days. The federal guidelines are really open-ended. It allows the CEO, in this case, the mayor or town managers or town administrators, you know, to make a determination how to wisely spend it and best spend it. You know, I suspect we will probably be working. I know I'll be working with my CFO, Troy Clarkson, to make sure that we put it in a manner that is really going to get, you know, the most benefit out of it. Is it putting in the stabilization? Is it putting in the general? I think it's probably stabilization at this point. But, you know, we'll figure that out. And then we're going to do a deep dive and an analysis on how we should spend it. And, you know, it's about helping businesses and helping families and rental assistance. And it's just a plethora of you know, needs right now. And I'm just really thankful that the federal government has decided that Brockton should be benefiting from a $35.6 million windfall.
Here we are a little bit more than a year since we were all kind of told, we need you to stay home. You got to wear a mask. We need to flatten the curve. You remember all these terms that we were dealing with. Put it into perspective, 1 year later, dealing with COVID and all that has been learned and all that has been endured by your community.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when I think back when I took office in January 6th of 2020, you know, we had heard about COVID-19 and it was overseas. And at that time it had gone to Italy. It hadn't hit the West Coast yet. And you know, my wife is a physician assistant. She went to medical school. So we, you know, we started to really start looking into it. And I remember having here at City Hall in the GAR room, a roundtable with medical clinicians from the VA and Brockton Hospital Signature and Good Sam and Father Bill's Mainspring was there, and a lot of just private partners and public partners, and brainstorming. Like, let's think about the worst case scenario to get to the best case. But I'll tell you, none of us could have imagined. I mean, how could you? It hadn't happened in a century. But I'm really proud of the collaboration and the teamwork. And my mantra has always been, listen, we have to work together, roll up the sleeves for a shared vision of a safe, healthy community, and let's get there. And we're almost there. You know, I'm really thankful Governor Baker, Lieutenant Governor Polito came down the other day with Secretary Sutter's toward the Shaw Center, which again, that's just another great example of collaboration. That's our local city clinic led by the Board of Health and our BEMA, Brockton Emergency Management. And we have created a wonderful working relationship, co-location with Brockton Neighborhood Health Center. So, you know, we are working together to have people roll up the sleeves, take the shot and save lives. So, you know, if I look back in the last year, you know, we're not out of the woods yet. I know that. But You know, the worst part of my day, Kevin, is at 4 o'clock, I get the death count and I get the sick count. And I really yearn for the day that my phone doesn't ring at 4 o'clock and no numbers increase, you know, and as a dad of three kids, it hasn't been normal for any of our boys and girls students. It just hasn't. There's been a lot of disappointment, but there's a resiliency, right? These youth throughout the nation have really done a unbelievable job of figuring out how to make do with what's before them, and the teachers and the staff as well. And it doesn't matter if it's public or private schools. Everyone is working the best we can. And, you know, there's an old saying, Teddy Roosevelt used to say, do what you can with what you have where you are. And I think COVID-19 has really exemplified what humans can do when you really work together. And I also want to thank all the people that put their lives on the line, Kevin, to save lives. You know, and it's not just the people in the hospitals. Those people were godsend, but it's the police and fire and DPW that have to go in and someone's house when there's a water pipe that broke. And you know, our nursing homes, our essential workers, the grocery stores. So listen, everyone's sick of it. Like, we're all sick of this. We're all frustrated. We don't want to wear masks anymore, but we have to continue. We have to, and we can't get complacent.
Do you feel as though this is a scenario that we're going to be enduring COVID-19 for yet another year, that this is not something that's going to just go away once we get all those shots in, whether it's 100 million, 200 million, 300 million Americans, we're still going to be dealing with this?
No, we are. And you know, I have Dr. Rick Herman, who's a medical doctor. He's been my consultant. He used to be the chief ER at both local hospitals, right? And Dr. Montesier, who leads our Board of Health. And we talk about every day at 10:45, we have a standing call. And we talk about this. I mean, there's variant strains out there. So unfortunately, you know, we're not going to get back to whatever's normal, whatever the so-called normal is. We're not. Eventually, we probably will get to a new normal. But right now, my whole purpose is, listen, let's minimize and mitigate the spread within the city of Brockton. And let's figure out how we can maximize people getting shots. And it's outreach and it's marketing and it's informing people. There is a lot of hesitation from different segments of the city of Brockton. And as mayor, I need to try to really get the numbers up that are going to maximize our efforts.
You're just tuning in. We are talking with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, also a co-host of Monday Night Talk, joining us. We're going to get him in studio one of these days once things return to a new normal. Mayor, let's talk a little bit about fire-related items. And this is not only historical items, but also a rash of fires that you actually had. One that actually took out the State House building that stood on the fairgrounds. I remember many times as a kid, many times over the years, you know, going to the fairgrounds, whether it be going in and out of that building or watching the fireworks from the hill near that building. To see that building was destroyed was heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up walking distance to fairground, and as a kid, all of us in the neighborhood would walk up, and there was the old corral there, and we'd have baseball games in the corral, and that was an architectural gem. That was a piece of history that was lost. And you know, as a youngster, and even as a kid in high school that worked at the fair, that was a cool building, and you know, the 4-H used it, and agriculture and crafts used it, and it was just awesome. And the fact that somebody intentionally set that on fire and destroyed it. I mean, I just thank God that no one was injured. You know, we have lost that building, but we didn't lose any lives. And we just have wonderful, brave firefighters in Brockton. That was a five alarmer. So we had mutual aid in here. We had a lot of neighboring communities helping us, and they put it out. And I'll tell you, it was a windy night last week, and the embers were flying across Belmont Street. And as you know, Harbor One is over there. There's businesses there. There's houses there. So the brave men and women put it out. But it's an active police investigation. The fire marshal and state police and Brockton police and our great firefighters are working together. And, you know, we're going to figure out and apprehend and arrest the person or persons involved in that. And they will be, he or she or they will be prosecuted to the folks extent of the law, Kevin.
And this was while the State House fire was probably the one is most memorable, the one that caught everybody's attention. There were a series of other fires. I believe that the stadium across the way, Rocky Marciano Stadium, Armand Colombo Field, there was a fire. And then I believe up at the Fields Park, and there might have been one other
behind
fire
West, West Middle School. There was a fire. Yeah, I mean, there was a rash of fires that night, and you know, there's just a sadness in Brockton because you know these were intentionally set. The damage at the Coach Colombo Field at Marciano Stadium has already been rectified. Thankfully, it wasn't large scope, but nonetheless, somebody intentionally tried to set it on fire, and they did create damage. So Superintendent Thomas and Kevin Cairo, the athletic director, addressed it, and it's just so disappointing that there'd be a sick person or people out there that are really trying to create damage and potential death. Again, there was a fire set behind West Middle School, you know, the old West Junior High, and that was thankfully put out. But again, that could have been a really serious situation. And then, you know, the fact is, and it was displayed on the news, there is some video of the individual. And again, I just have faith and confidence that that person will be apprehended.
Interesting is, you know, this month of March has a historical sense to the city of Brockton. Two major fires. One, I believe, this past weekend, I think you had told me during the break, the Grove Fire, a Groveland Fire. And also, let's not forget the Strand Fire, which, as of recent, it has been seen as one of the largest structure fires where you saw 13 firefighters killed. I believe that still is a large amount of firefighters being killed in U.S. history. Give me your thoughts about those historical those marks in history for the city.
Yeah, I mean, Brockton's a historic municipality, right? And they call us the City of Champions, but we've really had our share of sadness. And when you talk about the Grover Shoe Factory, that was back in 1905, March 20th of 1905, and 58 lost a life that day. It was on Main Street and Kalmar Street down in the Campello section, and it was a massive explosion. And again, back in 1905, we were still using horse-drawn fire apparatus. And again, we will always remember those souls that were lost and the bravery to fight that fire. And then March 10th, 1941, 80 years ago, 13 firefighters lost their lives, brave, heroic souls. And at that time, up until 9/11, that was the greatest loss in our nation's history of firefighters, even surpassed the tragedy in Worcester. So we had a wonderful, appropriate, respectful ceremony. And really what was so historic about it, other than the fact that living relatives still come here from those brave 13, Squad A, which was the actual apparatus, the truck that four of the individuals that perished that day were on, has been reacquired. Local 144, which is the local firefighters union, and former fire chief Ken Galligan, who was just an unbelievable keeper of history. They tracked it down, and a lieutenant from the Bill Recker firefighter fire department, who collects antique fire apparatus, found it in New Hampshire. It's been up there for 70 years. And so they worked out a deal where 144 was able to reacquire it, and it's come home. It's a piece of history that's come back home. And it was here at City Hall. And you could touch it, and you could look at it and take pictures. And it was really awe-inspiring thinking that, you know, hasn't been here in 70 years, but it was there. And within eyeshot was the wonderful block of granite and the wonderful depiction of the firefighter, which is the Strand Memorial. So a proud day in Brockton, always a sad day, but we will never, ever forget the Brave 13. And so, you know, what I just want to say is we just have a really, really, really dedicated law enforcement and fire personnel in Brockton. And the brave men and women put their lives on the line every day to serve and protect. And, you know, I'm just proud to be the mayor. That's my title, but Brocktonian is in me. And I'm just so, so proud of the fact that we have such brave people that have that calling, Kevin. And we'll never forget them. We'll thank them. But we always have to remember that it's a dangerous, dangerous profession that they've selected.
Did you have a chance to get a close-up of the Squad A truck? And was there any restoration done to it, or is there any plans to restore it?
It's beautiful. It's amazing. It still runs. They were driving it around. It is going to be restored. They're doing a fundraiser right now, and I bought some raffle tickets. I didn't win anything, but that's okay. It's for a good cause. I never win anything, Kevin, but I won an election, so there you go. But I think you know, we'll find a fitting location. We do have the fire museum up on Pearl Street, North Pearl Street, next to the Brockton Historical Society. I'm not sure if that's the location because, you know, this is a pretty decent sized truck, but working with the current fire chief, working with the union, working with retired fire chief, we'll come and work with citizens. We'll come up with a more than appropriate location where we can have guests come and visitors come and look at it. It's like I said, it's an amazing piece of history.
Yeah, and knowing that the city of Brockton has so much history, it's interesting to know that, you know, that this piece of equipment came home and that it took place, that it was able to be showcased during the 80th anniversary of a sad event in the city of Brockton. And you know, the Strand was actually right in the area of where City Hall is, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, actually, so if you're familiar with Brockton City Hall, okay, the School Street side, and when you come up School Street, you get to Main Street, and in front of that is now Frederick Douglass, used to be called High Street, but we have an amphitheater now where the Strand, in essence, was. It was kitty corner to, on School Street, kitty corner to City Hall. At that time, back in the 40s, there was actually a street that ran in between the Strand and where the amphitheater is now, a street that ran right in front of the steps of City Hall. But it, literally, I think about it every day when I park my car, because that was it. That's where those brave souls, and again, it was 13 loss of life, but there was a lot of injuries. So, yeah, I mean, it was a great day. It was a solemn day. It was a respectful day. And we'll continue that for the history of Brockton. There's no doubt about that, Kevin.
Brockton is known as the City of Champions, not only for its sports, for high school sports, Rocky Marciano, but also Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And we received, as Brocktonians, we received sad news, not this past weekend, but the weekend prior, that Marvelous Marvin Hagler had passed away. Where were you when you heard this news?
So I was at home. I had just got off of Zoom. Marvelous Marvin Hagler was a true Brocktonian. He's going to be forever a boxer. We are called the City of Champions because of Marvin and Rocky. And, you know, he, in my humble opinion, he was the best middleweight of all time. Yep. His fights were instant classics. You know, I watched the Hearns fight since Marvin's passed. I've watched it almost every night. The first round is without question the best round in history.
Yeah.
Not just middleweight, I'd say boxing history. I will also say he beat Sugar Ray Leonard. There's no doubt about that. And I watched that. I remember when he fought Hearns, I was playing for the Brockton Boxers football team. And a lot of us bought those war. There were red hats that said war. That's what Marvin said. He was going to war against Hearns. It's just sad. I mean, as a child, I played in the Hancock Basketball League with his son, Junior. And I remember taking a bus trip. It was to the Harlem Globetrotters. And Marvin got on the bus with us. And he was just there as a dad. But then at halftime, they had the champ come out at the Old Garden. He was just a great guy. 1984, my brother Ryan, my younger brother and I, and my dad, we stood in line for hours. Marvin opened up a store downtown. That day, I remember he had Bo Derek, the Hollywood star, had come. And he was just a really, really great champion, a great boxer. And I have a lot of memorabilia from him over the years. And, you know, it made Brockton proud, right? It was civic pride. People that lived in the city, his parade, we were all there when he was the champ. And he was just someone that set Brockton on the map, or reset it, because Marciano had done it earlier. But it's just a sad. 66 is just too young to go. And, you know, our thoughts and prayers go to the Hagler family, his wife, his mom, and his brother, Rock and Robbie Sims, another great middleweight, still live in the City of Champions. So, you know, we will honor Marvin in a respectful manner, you know, in the future, accommodating his family. But there's just so much sadness, and it was so sudden. But if you look back at his fights, he was a monster in the ring. He was a great, great, great fighter. And he'll be forever a Brockton boxer, in my opinion. And I know that that's shared by many times by people, Kevin. And I know you had a lot of one-on-ones with him and interviews. I'd love to hear it, Kevin.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of those interviews are on tape. So I'm still looking through all my tapes to try to narrow it down. I want to say the last time I saw him here for an event, and I'm not sure if you attended that event, was at the Massasoit Conference Center. I thought there was an event. I believe that the Petronelli brothers might have been there, or one of the Petronelli brothers might have been there. But Marvin actually had come back overseas from Italy.
Yep.
To be a part of this. Do you remember that or recall that?
I do. I was there. I was with my wife, Maria. It was unbelievable. It was the Massasoit Conference Center. It was a black tie event.
Yep.
I think Goody was there. I don't know if Pat was still with us at that time. But I'll tell you, it was a great event. And also at the fairgrounds, they had a Marvin Hagley evening where they had boxing events. And Vito Antifermo, Vito Mosquito was there.
Right.
There were a few other, Stevie Collins, who used to fight out of Petronelli, the Irish boxer, he was there. I know Vinny Paz came up from Rhode Island that night. Of course, the Petronellis were there. It was really wonderful event. And fond memories as a kid growing up. You know, the 80s was without question the best time of boxing, at least middleweight. But Marvin Hagler was the top of the top. And he really surpassed, Hagler. It was Hagler ahead of Leonard, Hearns, Antifermo, Alan Mentor, Mugabe. You could talk about them all. He was the best.
Hey, we're speaking with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan. Talk a little bit about the passing of Marvelous Marvin Hagler, legendary middleweight champion. I remember seeing him back when I was a kid, actually living in Southfield. And he and his family lived in Southfield for a bit. And he'd be running around, training. That was when he had hair. This is before he shaved his head. They'd always see his brothers around. His brother Michael would always be like, "Ah, my brother's a boxer. He thinks he's going to be a boxer." It's like, and he ended up becoming a champion, and he became a man of the people. I mean, you'd always see him, like you said, you saw him. You had some great photos that you actually showcased on Facebook that you took, you and your brother with Marvin.
You had all kinds
of magazines.
I'm a boxing nut. I love boxing, and I always did. And so I collected a lot of memorabilia over the years. When I bump into Marvin as a kid, he would sign stuff, and I've kept it. I cherish it. And it's a great loss. But I can just think back about the good times. I remember my father would take me to the exhibits, the exhibitions. One that was at the staff gym at Brockton High. My dad was a teacher there. It was a Friday night. I remember that. Marvin was up there exhibition. And then over at Massasoit. He would always, when he came out of the ring, he'd sit at the table and sign autographs for the boys and girls. That was just him. So just sadness. But, we have to think back about the greatness of the man, Marvin Hagler, in terms of who he was and how he created so much pride in Brockton and in Massachusetts. I mean, he was just a heck of a fighter.
So interesting enough, digressing back to the governor made a declaration while he was here last week. What was that? Do you want to share?
I do. Yeah, no, I was really happy. And, we were surprised and pleasantly surprised. May 23rd, Marvelous Marvin Hagler's birthday, and Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor came and, after the press conference about COVID and the updates, he had a wonderful governor's citation, and he declared May 23rd, Marvelous Marvin Hagler Day in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And, that is just a wonderful, wonderful tribute to an icon, a Brocktonian, and someone that really exhibited what it means to work hard. He didn't come from any means. Nope. He just worked hard, struggled, and he lost fights. He lost to Antifermo, and he just kept coming back. And that's it. We call ourselves the City of Champions, and Brockton's not a wealthy community, but we're an awesome community of great people. And we've taken our lumps right now with Kevin. Kevin, we've taken our lumps right now with COVID, and we've gotten knocked down, and but we've gotten right up. And that's something that Hagler showed us. It was great that the governor did that. And, his family, I know, is right now hurting, rightfully so. But once things settle down a bit, they're going to be really, really proud of the fact that the governor declared that May 23rd, Marvelous Marvin Hagler Day in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Well, Mayor, I want to thank you for joining us. So that's all the time we have. Anything you want to say just to wrap up our segment until our next one in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I look forward to the next one. I just want to thank you again, Kevin. I mean, you get the message out there, and I'm just asking people, please, you know, wear your mask, social distance, wash your hands no less than 20 seconds, you know, and if you are eligible to get the vaccine, please strongly consider getting it. I'm going to roll up my sleeve happily on April 19th when I meet the face, and it's that important. So again, be safe, be well, and thank you for what you do, Kevin.
You got it, sir. There he is, a Brockton mayor and co-host of Monday Night Talk, Robert Sullivan, joining us. We're going to step aside when we come back. The final segment of Monday Night Talk, heard right here on 95.9 WATD and 1460 WBMS.
If you want a drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, that's for Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA is an inclusive fellowship of individuals all around the world. The one thing you need to ask yourself is, am I ready to do something about my drinking problem? For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, call 617-426-9444 or visit AA.org.
Yes! Yes! Dad, I am crushing this game.
Anthony, please stop yelling. I'm about to sign on to a meeting.
Whoa! Check out that landing.
Anthony, please. Seriously? Oh, man. No internet. I have no internet.
Home. Work. Household bliss. Backed by Bluestone. Bluestone Bank. Let's get there. Together. Member FDIC, member DIF, and equal housing lender.
Invest your time in listening to CAPE Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. CAPE Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, we have arrived at the final segment of this week's Monday Night Talk. I like to call this, again, folks who tune into the show, you know what I'm going to say. I look at my radio program as like a meal. You know, you come in, you have a couple of drinks and a nap. That's like the first hour. Hour number two, it's entrees and dessert. And guess what, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, it's the dessert portion of our conversation. Joining me is Keith Sinister One Hayes, radio personality extraordinaire. And usually I'll have Keith on it. You know, there's a cornucopia of topics we could talk about, but I think our prime direction, 60% of the time, is sports driven. Keith, how are we doing?
Not bad, Kevin. Not bad. Pretty excited.
Are you excited because the Patriots have probably spent $40 million in salary and have already rebuilt the team? They got to have 20 new players already?
Yeah, well, you know what's so exciting is that last season you have a lot of blame to the season. You got COVID and all this other stuff, and the fact is that they've got kind of the perfect storm situation, drafting high, and they were $66 million below the cap, and they're doing something that we've never been able to see them do before because they've never been in this position before in the 20 years of the franchise.
Yeah, that's an awful lot of cap space to have, and to be, you know, dealing from a position of strength, if I may say it. And they were, you know, last week, day one, you know, 12:01. Actually, it wasn't even 12:01. It was like 12 o'clock in 22 seconds. They were already announcing players, you know, Matthew Judon, you know, they signed. It was Juwan Smith, you know, tight end, you know, and then Judon, and then, you know, and then a couple of days later, it's, you know, Hunter Henry. And it's like, oh, my God, we have, you know, twin tower tight ends again. It was an interesting, at least early free agency period. You know, it's the, what do they call that? The team, you know, you can kind of like sniff around other dogs' behinds and go, hey, you know, what do you think? Who are you? You know, you get to have the conversations with the free agents before they become free agents. They can commit to you. And you can announce it, and then you got to wait until later on in the week to make it official, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And what was great about this whole thing is after last season, the Pats went 7-9. They finished below 500 for the first time in 20 years. And everybody around here in sports media, we talked about this, about the doom and gloom, how everybody jumped off the Patriots Nation bandwagon. And we felt people just jumping to the conclusions. If you weren't going to ride this team, you don't need to ride now. And, you know, people start talking about Belichick not being that guy. Maybe it was all Brady. We all know, anybody who knows football, it wasn't just all Brady. So what does Belichick do? Belichick takes this free agency with $66 million below the cap. And the first thing he does is he says, I'm just going to show everybody what I can do with this money and how I can build a team if we were able to do this for the last 20 years. He comes out, he grabs the two top tight ends in free agency to bolster this team, completely makes everybody forget about the fact that Gronkowski was here. But what it does make you remember how productive this offense was when the Hernandez and Gronkowski were opposite each other. So, you know, right then and there, you know, this offense, Josh McDaniels has got a big smile on his face. Like I said, I am very excited for all the moves they've made.
But is there a chance? Here's the one key component they're missing. And this is no disrespect to the guy who wears the number one jersey. But the one thing it's missing still is a knowledgeable and a talented quarterback, a signal caller, a field general to be able to lead this team. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And I've been saying this, and I think for what we're seeing, if you're paying really close attention, what's going on in this free agency right now as we head into the draft, you know, in the next few months, the Patriots, I feel, they're 100% going for a quarterback. And everybody says, well, Belichick's always drafted defense. And I get it. I know what Belichick has done in the last 20 years. But again, we've never been in this position before, this team. He's taking a quarterback, and these moves solidify it. They bring back Pro Bowler Trent Brown to solidify that line and move Isaiah Wynn over.
Right.
You bring in a wide receiver from San Fran, and you bring in Nelson Aguilar from Philadelphia, who was spending time at the Raiders. When you look at this offense now, you've got this two tight end set, Edelman in the slot, you got Nelson Aguilar on the outside, you've got N'Keal Harry on the opposite side, and you can bring in the kid from San Fran to swing every now and then out and about. This offense is going to be dangerous, in my opinion. And like I said, you've got some running backs who've got some great hands. So it's going to be very interesting. With what this team has for weapons right now on paper, a rookie quarterback is going to excel and build confidence with this receiving core. And Cam Newton, any veteran quarterback would be in the position to tutor anybody that they bring in. And Cam is the best guy to do it, I think.
Yeah, you're sitting here and you're talking about, you know, that this offense is going to be dangerous. I think the defense, the Patriots just rebuilt not only their D-line, but, I mean, you've got Dante Hightower coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Judon, that was the one guy who, when you played Baltimore, you know, you worried about, right?
Yep.
And this guy, and I've heard pundits say that maybe he was misplayed as being strictly an edge guy in Baltimore. This is a guy who I feel can work. He can play all over the field. I don't know if he's a sideline-to-sideline kind of a guy, but this is a guy who's going to help you stop the run. That was the biggest problem the Patriots had with their defense. They had an exceptional set of cornerbacks and defensive backs where they can, you know, they were able to hold down targets downfield. But, you know, if you were to do, you know, if you had a quarterback that was elusive, or if you just did a single draw, you know, you would not be able to, the Patriots would struggle to stop the other team's running game and would give up anywhere between 110 and 125 yards per game to just a regular running back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with this group of, and what's fantastic is besides Dante Hightower coming back and signing Matthew Judon, we back. Kyle Van Noy, I thought the one thing that the Patriots defense lacked last year was a defensive playmaker. And that is who Kyle Van Noy is. He is a playmaker. Then you got Chase Winovich, Josh Uche. I mean, Terrence Holmes showed that he was more than just, you know, a guy who should be on special teams. You've got like one of the deepest linebacking cores in football right now. That's my opinion.
And the funny thing is this is how they really, people are really upset. So 2 years ago, the Patriots let Kyle Van Noy go down to Miami. Miami has to give up a fourth round compensatory pick. That takes place this year. So not only do you got their fourth round compensatory pick, you got the player back that you let go that they gave up the pick for. And I'm saying this is just genius how things work out for Belichick.
And I think the one thing, and here's the one thing you had mentioned about having that cap room. Here's the other thing that I feel it's like a perfect storm, right? You had the cap drop because of COVID.
It was That's right. It
dropped. So that meant that the number of suitors that you would have who would be vying for some of these free agents didn't necessarily have the cap space or the room to be able to do anything, which basically gave the Patriots. It's almost like knowing that there's a concert and only four people show up and it's like the best band ever is going to be performing in front of you. You know what I mean? It's like your own personal concert.
And people don't even realize that the fact that Patrick Chung retired, that's more money freed up against the cap again.
Right.
Because he was 3 years into this team. I mean, I'd have to look up and see exactly how much that money is going to be freed up. But again, that's just more money for them to spend. And if I'm not mistaken, I thought they did sign another linebacker today, if I'm not mistaken.
They did. You're absolutely correct. And I was just going to mention him. I was going to say, you know, the rich getting richer. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was Rakeem. Rakwan. I have the name here somewhere. Give me a second.
Rakwan McMillan?
Yes.
Is who they got?
Ooh. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And again, they rebuilt. You got Godchalk, who you brought in from Miami, who, I mean, his, you know, I loved Lawrence guy, but you know what? See you later, bye. You know, we needed to rebuild that defensive line.
Right. Well, you know, I'd like to see David Andrews come back. I'm hoping maybe.
No, David.
The waters.
You're talking about Lawrence guy, because David Andrews did sign a four-year deal.
Oh, I missed it. I didn't know he signed.
He did. He re-signed.
Did they overpay? That's the question I need to know.
But what's great is that now you have, you know, if you're Karras, you know, here's the thing that's interesting is Ted Karras, you know, you signed him back from Miami because, you know, he thought things were going to be sunnier down in Miami. Well, maybe so much. You know, weather-wise, but maybe not playing for the Miami Dolphins. So you had your top center, David Andrews is returning, but for backup, who can play center and guard? Ted Karras. Now, Karras signed a one-year, $4 million deal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he thought he was going to be competing for the starting job. I think he figured, hey, This is going to be my prove me year to be able to show that I'm worth money. I'll go back out when there's more money in the market next year. Not so fast. Not so fast. Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with radio personality Keith Hayes from the booth, heard on Hoobazoo.com. He's here talking a little bit about the New England Patriots and the free agent frenzy that we saw last week as the Patriots were at the table early and often filling their plate with the prime free agents who were on the market. Now, you mentioned about Nelson Aguilar and that was probably the top wide receiver signing other than Kendrick Bourne. Are you surprised that the Patriots didn't try to go after, you know, Galladay or go after Juju Smith-Schuster? Are you surprised?
No, but there are some rumors. There are some rumors out there that there might be a Gilmore trade coming up for a wide receiver. But I don't think we need OBJ here. So, but I think that's just more of just a rumor. I think the Pats went with who they usually go with. They go with kind of these journeymen who have been to a couple of different teams and need to find themselves. Like I said to someone, they said, oh, Nelson Agholor. I said, look, Nelson Agholor was only shipped out of Philly because he had this one dropped pass that everybody crucified him for. Prior to that drop pass, he was a solid receiver for the Eagles, but they just couldn't take that drop pass. He went over to the Raiders last year, and I think he had 890-something yards in receptions last year with the Raiders. That's not a bad number at a wide receiver spot for the season.
Right.
So Nelson's going to come here and produce.
So I guess my question to you is that who do the Patriots target in the draft, or are they holding out hopes for Marcus Mariota getting cut by the Raiders, the Vegas Raiders, or do they take a flyer? Do they make a trade for Deshaun Watson, who I think is damaged goods right now?
Ain't happening.
Knowing that there's so many individuals who are involved in this civil suit, I would wonder if he's going to play next year.
Yeah, look, I think they learned their lesson from Antonio Brown, even though he did win a chip with Tom Brady. I think the Patriots are going to stay away from Deshaun Watson as more women are coming out now with this whole friggin' sex scandal thing with him. So I don't see them grabbing him. And like I said, the Pats don't need a Band-Aid. They need to build the future. And I think that they're going to go with the quarterback in the draft, and Cam Newton's going to be that tutor. And like we just saw, Ryan Fitzpatrick was a rumor to be coming here. He ends up with the Redskins. Mm. Mariota will probably be looking for someplace else to go. Deshaun Watson, they're saying he won't suit up for the Texans. But the problem is now is with this whole thing, other teams may not take him. They may not want him. So he may have to suit up for the Texans.
And just a quick correction. You said
Raekwon?
No. You were saying as far as who are some of the other quarterbacks? You mean Fitzpatrick is with the Washington football team.
Yes.
Correct.
Hey, I said Redskins. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, sorry.
The black guy forgot.
But the thing is, if they hurry up and pick a name, then we can kind of go by that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But speaking of the Washington football team, you know, they let Alex Smith walk.
Confusing.
Is he worth the flyer?
Yeah, with what he did. I don't think last year was a beginner's luck thing coming back from that injury. I think he's a solid guy. He's a gutsy guy. I don't understand why that happened. I'm really confused.
Are you watching what's going on within the AFC East? I mean, the Buffalo Bills adding Mitch Trubisky. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I thought it was a good ad. They're looking for a backup, a good backup. I mean, that wasn't what got them, out of the, not making it to the Super Bowl last year. I mean, it wasn't the quarterback position, but yeah, it was odd. That's another odd signing for me. And I did question it.
Okay. Any other acquisitions within the division that you're watching and you're curious about? I mean, I've been watching the Jets.
The Patriots did have one. They brought back Nick Folk, which lets me believe that there is absolutely no kickers out there in free agency. And there's nobody. Well, they may draft another, but they haven't been able to draft a good field goal kicker. So the question here is, what's up with the field goal kicking situation?
Well, you drafted a kid last year, but he was already a PR nightmare out of the gate with some of his beliefs and a tattoo he had. And then when they brought him in the camp, he couldn't get it between the uprights. I mean, that was the problem. I mean, they held on to him, so he'll be competition for Nick Folk. But I hate to say it, but Nick Folk, he did earn his new contract. He really did.
Yeah, he did. He did well. This was a guy. Last year he had an appendix left, and I think he was back within. I think he only missed one game, right?
Yeah, he wasn't gone long.
Yeah, one game. So, to be honest, I would like to see the NFL has been really tossing around this idea of bringing female kickers in. Colleges already started to do it. We had four female kickers throughout NCAA football last year. There's no reason why we can't start entertaining and looking at that. There's some great female soccer players out there that I'm pretty sure could kick it through the uprights in an NFL stadium. It might be time. You've got enough women that are joining the ranks of referees, coaches. I think it's time to at least get the women on the field of play in some capacity. And I think field goal and punting may just be that route.
Again, if you are just tuning in, we're having a conversation with Keith Hayes. Keith Sinister One Hayes from, you know him from The Booth, heard on hoobazoo.com every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So what would you say of all of the signings, is this team better than a 10-win team? You, without all these signings and with Cam Newton under center, you were a 7-win team last year. Have you improved to at least a 10 or 11-win team?
Yeah, this is definitely a playoff caliber team. Like when people talk about that 7-9 season last year, I go, well, let's look at it this way. Two of those losses in the last few seconds of the game were fumbles that in games that they could have won. They could have really beat Kansas City last year. And when you look at last year's 7-9 season, you didn't have all your guys on defense that you usually have out there on the field that you're going to get back this year. You had three defensive starters gone from this team. So you put all of that stuff back out there. You had no Edelman last year. You put all of that stuff back out on this table for next season, and I think this is definitely a playoff caliber team that has to get past Buffalo to make it to the AFC championship game, and I think it definitely can be done. The question here is just guys staying healthy. Like I said, a lot of people beat up on N'Keal Harry, but N'Keal Harry was really the only target on the field last year. If N'Keal Harry's on that field with all these guys this year, he's not going to see much double coverage this time, and it's going to draw a lot of mismatches where he's the taller guy on every coverage.
One of the interesting things that I've been hearing pundits say is that the Patriots are doing what their opposition in their division have done for so long, and that is throwing money at the problem to fill in their holes and not growing their own talent before it heads off into the open market.
I totally disagree with that. I've heard that with some of the pundits too. And here's the thing: the Patriots took $66 million, and they got top quality players. They've got 2, 3, 4, 5 top quality players. What we've usually seen with teams in the NFL with this cap space, a lot of teams will go and sign one player and blow up the entire cap just to get that one player. The Patriots maximized their $66 million and got some of the best players here and spread it out over the next four to five years. You've got, like, the tight end situation. You've got Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith here tied up for the next 4 years if they're productive. Instead of saying, Jonnu Smith, we're going to pay you this for 2 years and blow up our cap. No, you spread it out. You lock them in for 4 years. And now if this works out, you've got a great double tight end set for the next 4 years.
So I would ask you, let me ask you this then. Do you feel that it's the Bills and the Chiefs that the Patriots have to make it through or that are right now at the top of the heap and that the Patriots have to hope that they can at least be in the conversation with a wild card bid?
Yeah, I think when you break down that AFC division for this year coming up, you definitely got to talk about getting past the Chiefs, definitely getting past the Bills in your own division. You can't sleep on the Titans. And I was very impressed by the Cleveland Browns last year. So I think the Cleveland Browns got something really special going on. They're really nothing to sleep on next year also. So you got to pay attention to that squad.
When is Baker Mayfield's when is his contract up? And is it possible that the Browns move on from Baker because he hasn't paid the dividends they thought? And could that be an attractive chip for the Patriots in 2022?
Could be, but I think they're happy with his performance. I think his performance last year solidified his position with the Cleveland Brown organization, even though he does have the best commercials in the NFL right now. Second comes Patrick Mahomes, but
right. So again, knowing that the draft is about a month and a half away here, so what do you feel are some of the key items? What are the key positions that the Patriots are going to have to focus on in the draft?
I'm going to say a quarterback. And now that Patrick Chung is retired, I believe they're probably going to go for a safety. And, you know, they always go for a running back. But, like, I think it's going to be quarterback, safety, and then probably a running back. Maybe another wide receiver if they lose N'Keal Harry before the draft hits.
But what about the kid that they drafted, that the Patriots drafted last year, the kid that was a Division II stud? What about him?
Which one was that?
I bet the college he came out of. I'm scanning right now as we speak as to his name, as I'm currently, I just got into to the defense here.
He was drafted last year?
He was a top round pick last year. Kyle Duggar.
Oh, yes. Who showed some flashes?
But I see Kyle Duggar as being the replacement for Chung.
You think he had some flashes, but my feeling is that I think they're still going to draft the safety because they lost the Chung. Will Kyle Duggar will have to earn that position to keep that position, but I think they're going to draft the safety to replace that Chung.
Hmm. And who would you, now if they do draft quarterback, who do you see them going after? Do they go after Justin Fields? Are they going after a quarterback that Cam Newton can kind of give advice to? Because I feel that Justin Fields would be in that discussion.
Well, you know, and one of the things is you got to, you know, they always say when players come here and that the atmosphere makes people want success. So I'm going to believe that whoever comes here is going to want to be part of the success, especially after the Patriots have missed out on the playoffs in 20 years. Everybody who knows me, and I'd be a fool for not mentioning it, but my pipe dream has always been for something to happen and they end up getting Trevor Lawrence, which is probably not going to happen, but it's my dream and let me have it. But I think what you might see here, and the rumors are, is that that on draft day, the Patriots are going to try to move up to that 7 spot. If those rumors are true and the Patriots are looking to move up to 7, that opens up the door for Mac Jones, Justin Fields, and a few other quarterbacks. I think Justin Fields and a Mac Jones works better here, but the reason why I'm leaning towards a Mac Jones is because of Belichick's relationship with Nick Saban.
Yep.
They're great buddies. They talk in the offseason. They go out on each other's boats in the offseason. I have a strange feeling that Mac Jones is going to be that guy coming here because of that connection between Saban and Belichick. I just kind of feel it in my bones. And if that's the case, I think that's still a win-win. Mac Jones is a good quarterback, and I think he would definitely listen to a Cam Newton.
Yeah, we're speaking with Keith Hayes, radio personality with Hoobazoo.com, the booth every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As we're wrapping up right now, so if you were to give me a grade, a bona fide grade for the Patriots' moves last week during the free agent frenzy, what would you give for an honest early grade?
Honest early grade? You ever see the movie Christmas Story when she has to grade the essays, the themes? A plus, 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 right. Plus.
But is there a chance, let me ask you, of all the people, all the individuals that were signed, is it possible we could see a couple of these individuals get cut, that they may not make the roster?
Yeah, because, you know, we're coming off that COVID season. The question is did guys stay healthy? Did they work out during this offseason, after the season ended? Again, a lot of these guys coming here are hungry journeymen who, you know, we've seen them put the work in. Yeah, you got to ask that question. Who's going to be the one guy out of this group that's going to be the one that you're going to say, damn, I wish we never signed him? Could it be a Nelson Agholor? That's where my mind kind of feels with this group, but I don't know. I think the Patriots have a point to prove, and I think this free agent signing is going to be better than what people think.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us and chatting up about Patriots and the week that was. And it'll be interesting to see if there'll be any other big names signed by the Patriots. But I think they're kind of done. I think the big ticket free agents were, you know, day one and day two, and everything else has just been kind of filling in the holes. So we'll have to have this conversation again. You know, our Christmas is just, like I said, five weeks away. You know, NFL draft. That's our Christmas. You know, the guys who love the NHL. So the NFL.
And I must mention again, I hate Thursday night draft. Every time until they change it back to Saturday, I'm going to mention that every time, Kevin, because okay. I miss our Saturday afternoons watching the draft. Thursday night prime time is only for money and ratings. It's not about the fans. They could care less.
That is definitely true. Well, listen, I want to thank you again for joining us. And I want to thank the folks at home for tuning in to another Monday Night Talk in the books. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.